I read an article in the New Yorker magazine about Sharia law, which is the traditional Islamic law. And it was about a lot of the Middle Eastern countries where this law is applied in some cases very brutally. And they focused on the way men especially will treat women who are accused of sexual crimes. And what was especially shocking to me was it's often the brothers and fathers of the accused who will maim them or brutalize them or in extreme cases kill them in accord with Sharia law. I remember being, you know, appalled by that article, but then frankly it passed out of my mind. But boy, it came roaring back just a few nights ago when I saw this wonderful new movie that's now in limited release called The Stoning of Saraya M. It's based on a true story about a woman in a little Iranian village in the period just after the Khomeini Revolution, so like maybe early 1980s, not that long ago. And Saraya is caught in a very bad marriage. Her husband cheats on her and beats her and mistreats her, and he wants to put her away to marry another woman. And Saraya is reluctant to do that. She's blocking him. So the husband, in connection with the mullah, the religious leader in the village, and the mayor, conspires to accuse her of adultery. And it's very clear in the movie that she's utterly innocent of the charge. But they trump up this charge, and then the men come together and formally accuse her. Well, this is very dire business, because it means, according to Sharia law, that she would be stoned to death. Well, she raises her voice in violent protest. She has a few of her own supporters. They protest, but the women have nothing to say about it. Finally, it's this all-male council that decides, yes, she's guilty, and they condemn her to death. And the movie spares us nothing of the stoning of Saraya. It shows her being brought out publicly, and then she's buried to her waist. And you can see that in some ancient accounts of stoning. That's what they would do. They would bury someone. Then they tied her arms behind her back, so she's utterly defenseless. And there she is. And then we see now, in accord with that New Yorker article, the first person to throw a stone is her own father, her own aged father. Then, I think everyone in the theater found this devastating, her two young sons, they're maybe 10 and 12, throw the stones at her. And then that begins the barrage, and we see the whole process by which she's brutally put to death. So, what do you do with a movie like this? What do you conclude from it? I don't want to conclude, certainly, that, well, look at those bad Muslims over there. God knows we have our own history of brutality in the name of religion. Go back to the book of Leviticus. You'll find advocacy for stoning. People should be stoned for certain crimes. It's in our own tradition. And, of course, we have, you know, from the Crusades and the burning of witches and the terrible mistreatment of heretics and all of that. So, I mean, I fully admit our own implication in the abuse of religion. Nevertheless, what I found really disquieting about this movie was this is not about ancient history or about medieval history. This is about very recent times. I remember the post-Khomeini period very well, and the fact that, you know, Sharia law is a lively issue today in many countries around the world where there's fear that it will be imposed. So again, what do we do? What do we conclude? What struck me a lot during the movie was there is within the great spiritual logic of Christianity a way to undermine and diffuse the kind of travesty of justice that's on display in this movie. The scene that kept coming back to my mind, because it's so like the movie, is a scene from the 8th chapter of John's Gospel, the woman caught in adultery. It's just like the story of Saraya M. Here's a woman who has been accused. Now in Jesus' story, we presume justly accused, because, you know, she was caught in the very act of adultery. So she's, let's say, justly accused of adultery by religious officials who caught her in the act. A mob forms around this. They have the stones in their hands. They're about to stone her. And they come to Jesus. They come to this religious authority. Master, what should we do? Moses says we should stone such women. What do you say? And then famously, Jesus bends down and he just writes on the ground. Then he stands up and says famously, "Let the one without sin be the first to cast a stone at her." And then one by one, beginning with the elders, they drop their stones and the crowd dissipates like a summer cloud. Now see, what's going on there? You see not the religious sanctioning of scapegoating violence. You see Jesus interrupting scapegoating violence. Jesus, in the name of God, in the very person of God, getting in the way of this kind of violence. I know I've mentioned before on YouTube, but the great French philosopher René Girard, who says, all of our societies, from a little coffee klatch conversation to nation states, all of our societies in their dysfunction are predicated upon scapegoating violence. We find someone or some group to blame, and then we come together, now in a dysfunctional way, but still we come together in our common hatred. At the limit, we kill the other. We exclude the other. See, Girard says that's the truth from the beginning. That's been the way we organize ourselves. What's been unveiled in Christianity, and all the word apocalypsis means in Greek, apocalypse, it means taking the veil away. It means revealing something, revelatio in Latin, taking the vellum, taking the veil away, right? What's been revealed? He says, this dynamic. We tend to organize ourselves in this deeply dysfunctional way. And then what's further been revealed is God is not on the side of the victimizers. God is on the side of the victims. And that's why, you know, the devil's name, the Diabolos, is the scatterer, but his other name, Satanas, means the accuser. It's very interesting. And so the accuser of our brothers has been cast out, the book of Revelation says. So the accusation move, that's what Jesus interrupts. That's the Satanas, the Satan. And he takes the blame of the Satan. He takes the blame upon himself and thereby undermines the logic of violence and counterviolence. And why do we base our societies on blaming? But we all do it. We all, the time we this morning at the breakfast table at Mundelein, we were all doing it. That's what we human beings do. We get together and then we feel cool because we're blaming. Did you hear about that? Oh, God, that guy's such an idiot. We all do it all the time. And you can say the whole logic of Christianity is don't do that. And, of course, you see it in the crucifixion of Jesus. Who is Jesus but a scapegoated victim? A mob has formed around him. He's led outside of the city and he's put to death brutally. Caiaphas puts it correctly. Wouldn't it be better for one man to die than for the whole nation to be destroyed? He correctly expresses the logic of scapegoating violence. But the heart of Christianity is the undermining of that by the power of the cross. So that's why in the movie, when the stones are being thrown and then the shout goes up, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, you know, God is great. God is behind this. Christianity, at its best, God knows we get it wrong all the time, but at its best is saying, no, God is not sanctioning the violence. God is on the cross, is the victim of violence. And that's why I would say, as you look at Soraya M., this figure buried up to her waist, she's been stoned to death, covered in blood. There she is, this devout Muslim woman who functions as a very powerful cinematic Christ figure. I think to see that is to see the power of this movie.